Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, David. How are you?
Morena, though. Better than bruised, but here I am.
So we've got a couple of quite heavy topics to talk about this morning. I want to start with the government's decision not to denounce China's treatment of Uyghur Muslims as genocide. ACT Party Deputy Leader and Foreign Affairs Spokesperson Brooke Van Velden filed a motion to debate the abuse of Uyghur Muslims by the Chinese government as genocide. Genocide being the key term here. Instead, the government drew back from this, opting to soften the language and instead discuss the abuses in more general terms. Can you begin by giving a brief overview of what is happening to Uyghur Muslims at the hands of the Chinese government currently?
Yeah, sure. What you've got is enforced, the Chinese government disputes this, but it seems to be pretty well established, enforced sterilization, detention of up to maybe a million people. Ostensibly, it's to maintain security in the region because this is a Muslim community, if you like, that they perceive to be some kind of security problem, and they are treating them with scant regard for human rights. And the birth rate has fallen by something like 60% as a consequence of this. And you might dispute the semantics somewhat, but if that's not wiping out a culture, what the hell is?
So why shy away from condemning these acts and obvious violations of human rights as genocide, especially considering that some of Aotearoa's traditional allies, such as Britain, Canada, the United States, have already said that these actions amount to genocide? What justification would the New Zealand government have for watering down its view? And how do you think the international stage will view this decision from a country that likes to think of itself as a moral superpower?
I like that. It does like to think of itself as a moral superpower. Occasionally, in the past, we have kind of, the country has walked that talk as well. And principally with Norman Kirk, saying to hell with the trade ramifications, we're going to assert an independent way, and it was kind of working, except that he died and the administration was washed away and Muldoon came in. But key word was in there just a moment ago, trade. It's always about trade, because
right.
We are a highly trade dependent nation, and so always there is this agonizing compromise that you find yourself making, and you can bet that our Prime Minister feels it agonising, but she's also clearly bending to that will. And got to take this opportunity, because hell, I hardly ever say it about the pop-up leader of the National Party, but she's on the right track here. She says this proves once again that we shouldn't put all our eggs in one basket, and what she means by that, of course, is trade. You know, we're in the space of 10 years, we've become hugely reliant on China for trade. And there is an argument, and I'm going to digress here slightly, but I think it's worth saying, there is an argument to say we really could be much less reliant as a trading nation in these decades ahead, because of the way technology is leaping ahead. The cost of manufacture is coming down to zero. It's much more now about the intellectual property of design, and it's also conceivable that you can do much more manufacturing here than we ever could before. And I say all of that because that would mean we could be much more economically self-sufficient, and we had a go at that once before.
Of trade, the Green Party spokesperson for Foreign Affairs, Gulriz Ghataman, said that it's unsettling to know that we're open about saying we could prioritise trade over mass torture and death. How long do you think New Zealand can do this? Because you've said that at some point you believe that we may not need to be so reliant. But how long can we continue to prioritise trade over horrific acts and abuses of human rights?
It's a fine question. You know, maybe we could find a little more courage, like we did in the early 70s, and see what happens. you acknowledged before that a lot of the large trading partners have already done it, so it's not as though it would be especially brave. It's the risk, I think, that is perceived here is because we're small, we might take more of a kicking, because they would see it as an opportune moment to express their displeasure. But maybe, you know, it is the endless conundrum for us. There's a famous poem by James K. Baxter called A Bucket of Blood for a Dollar, which was all about Vietnam and implying that our trade considerations motivated us more than anything. And it is the fact that because we're so reliant, we do get quite anxious about it. But, you know, you've got to stand for certain convictions, don't you? You've got to maybe be a bit bold and see what happens. And maybe you live, you know, in living with the consequences, maybe you make this place a bit better. And that's why I was talking about, you know, the prospect of changing our economic structure.
I'd like to move now to another thing that's happened in Parliament recently. Speaker of the House Trevor Mallard has accused a man of sexual assault in a fiery Parliament debate, and the opposition has now called for his removal. First off, what's happened? Because my understanding is that Trevor Mallard accused this man in Parliament of sexual misconduct, then retracted the comment. This resulted in a defamation settlement which cost taxpayers over $330,000, and now he's brought it up again in quite a dramatic way. Can you bring us up to speed here for those who may not have their heads wrapped around this? Why was it brought up in Parliament again?
Sure. Well, why it keeps coming up is because the National Party is actually trying to make an issue out of this, and so Mallard is quite combative, and if you say that he's in the wrong, he will defend himself. So that's kind of what's going on in the latest round. But the broader context is that, first of all, you had identification in the Francis report that there was widespread bullying and malpractice in the workplace in Parliament. And right in the middle of that, there emerged this other issue of somebody accused of sexual assault. And Trevor Mallard talking about it on, pretty sure I recall hearing him saying it on Morning Court, referred to having a rapist in the building. That was the overreach, saying it was rape, when in fact there was sexual assault. It's much less clear that the sexual assault did not take place. I'm choosing my words a little carefully here. But, you know, there was something that happened, but he kind of overreached by using that word rape. And so then you had a bunch of people, especially older male journos, who it would appear knew the person in question and were taking offence because it offended the principle that you don't rag on a good guy.
Right.
And so there was all of that going on. Meanwhile, you had people who had given evidence and because they'd been traumatised, were somewhat sketchy in their retelling of it. But because, of course, that's what can happen in these things.
Do you think this speaks to a broader issue that we have in society, where there's this lack of focus on victim support, and we get caught up in how these issues should and should not be discussed? Because it seems like there's a lot of focus on Trevor Mallard and not maybe the environment in Parliament.
Just to get my words right, I'm going to quote from my newsletter yesterday. What seems to have got lost here is an understanding of where, how, and why this all arose, namely the work culture in Parliament, as described by many accounts of people who work there, bad, wrong, and at times extremely dangerous to women. That's what it's all about. What we're seeing instead is the National Party thinking that they've possibly found a straggler to the herd, because they're chasing like hyenas and they haven't had a meal in weeks, and they're having a go. They think they can see something here, and they're pretending to be upset about due process and the wasting of $300,000 in legal fees because Mallard wouldn't back down, and the guy accused was pursuing his legal rights. $300,000 in the larger scheme of things is neither here nor there. Just as one example in the newsletter, I said, you know, Murray McCulley blew about $14 million in a fiasco in the Saudi Arabian desert. And they let him go on being a minister. You know what? This is not big money, and the National Party pretending it is bullshit.
Right.
And all of it is a pantomime, and all of it is, as you rightly just said before, diverting from the much larger and more important question of the workplace culture in Parliament. And I've worked there, and I can tell you, it is not normal, and it is intense, and the susceptibility to bullying and sexual harassment is real. And substantial. And that's what Mallard was very mindful of as Speaker of the House. You know, it is his role to try and change that. And he was speaking in those terms principally because he was recognising that here was clear evidence that, much needed to change. But, right. Of course, good guy syndrome then intruded on the whole process and took it off in a whole other direction, and it's regrettable.
Just really quickly before we say goodbye today, I just want to touch on the Samoan election because it's still in a deadlock after the April 9th election, and this is between the Human Rights Protection Party, which has governed Samoa for 39 years, and the Fa Tuatua I Le Atua Samoa Uatasi, or FAST Party, which was only founded in June 2020. We'll just have to go quickly on this, but what's happened and how is this deadlock going to be resolved?
Well, you've got competing considerations here. One is going to the court, the court to get a decision on the constitutionality, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, of what's been happening, versus just going headlong into a new election. And it took 5 years to get this present one, this one just held, stood up, and they're proposing to have it done in 2 weeks. And the FAME party are saying, you can't do this in 2 weeks and tell us that it's going to be done reliably. I do get a sense, though, that, you know, this has been a huge, huge surge forward for the FAME party, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did well, just as well, in the next one, because there's much unease about the ruling party overreaching and undermining legal rights. And that's where this all groundswell all developed in the last year, propelled by modern savvy social media. All of that could come to bear in the next election. But there is that FAME consideration of, will this be a free and fair election? And you could worry about that. But it's fascinating. But I think, you know, what you can see here is a move to substantial change. And I think at the end of it, you might just see the FAME party go even further. But Zoe, I'm no expert on Samoan politics. I should have said that at the start. But that's what it feels like.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, political commentator David Slack. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.